Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
From KQED.
Hey, everyone. Wait. Sorry. Was this real? We're doing it over?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Another hallucination. Another flashback.
Who even am I? Hey, everyone. From KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos.
And I'm Scott Schaefer. Today on The Breakdown...
If that bill were the law today, I'd shut down the border right now and fix it quickly. Bipartisan bill would be good for America and help fix our broken immigration system.
Immigration has overtaken concerns about the economy in some polls of U.S. voters, with even Democrats expressing alarm over a crisis at the southern border.
So is this the election issue of 2024? Today's guest is an immigration reporter for the New York Times who has covered the issue since former President Donald Trump's tumultuous term. Hamed Ali-Aziz is part of the Times Washington team covering immigration and the Department of Homeland Security, and he joins us now.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. So, you know, I feel like this is one of those issues that everybody likes to talk about, but not everybody understands very well. As I said, you've been watching this and covering it for a while. Can you just kind of set the stage for us? Like, where are we when we talk about the southern border, and how does the number of migrants there, the kind of situation, compare to years past?
Right. The last few years, we've seen record numbers of people crossing the border. In December alone, there were days where 11,000 people were crossing the southern border, each day. And if you look at the numbers during the Biden administration and compare them to the Trump administration, the crossings have almost doubled. So this administration is really struggling with dealing with this mass migration, you know, across the world, across the hemisphere, and many folks coming to the southern border.
And if you had to pick one or two top reasons for that, how much of it is the economic situation in Central America deteriorating, or, you know, safety concerns, or the Biden administration itself kind of giving a green light?
I think it's a combination. If you look at, you know, Venezuela, where you see the government there crumbling, the economy in a really difficult position, Cuba, which their economy tanked during COVID, in other places throughout Central and South America where security concerns are really at the top of minds of people, you know. And so they come to the U.S., they're looking for safety, they're looking for economic opportunity, they're looking for anything. And I think a lot of people saw the Biden administration as the opposite of Trump and as a way to come to the U.S., as a way to resettle here and have an opportunity to a new life.
I mean, talk about that, because we've seen coverage of how people documenting their stories on TikTok and other social media have blown up. You hear this narrative often from the right, you know, critics, more hardline immigration folks, that, oh, there's this sense of like open borders under a Democrat. When you talk to migrants who are making, you know, what we should say is a very dangerous journey that I don't think most people would undertake if they didn't feel a need to, like, how much truth is there to that? That there is like a narrative that changes over the years and gives people more of a sort of reason to undertake that journey?
Yeah, I was just speaking to a Colombian woman who resettled in the Bay Area recently. And she certainly was aware of, you know, this idea that the border was, you know, more friendly, more open to migrants than in years past. But for her, the main reason she made the journey from Colombia to the U.S. was what she said were the serious security concerns that she had. I mean, you know, really uprooting her entire life, selling her home, taking all of, her belongings with her child, her, you know, 15-year-old child. You know, these are types of risks that I think oftentimes folks are going to take regardless. And it depends on, the administration, Republican or Democrat, how they handle people coming to the southern border.
If you think back to the situation when Biden took office, we had seen, months or even years of unaccompanied minors, of kids being separated from their parents. And that was really an outrage for a lot of people, including, I think, Joe Biden. But he also paused deportations almost immediately after taking office. What impact did that have, do you think, in terms of accelerating that message? Like, hey, the border's more friendly. Let's go.
Yeah, it's always hard to measure, how these types of messages get spread and what type of impact they have. That specific, the deportation pause, was, a major, platform for a lot of, liberal and left lawmakers and advocates on this issue. They really wanted something like that. And so it was a bit surprising to see, President Biden, who is, known more as a moderate, to do this on day one. It took me by surprise for sure. It's important to note that deportation pause was blocked in federal court within a few days, and it never really had the chance to take full effect. But, one could argue that message to people across the hemisphere was that there wasn't going to be enforcement in the U.S.
Yeah. So, I mean, on the other hand, you had someone like Biden who campaigned really on this message of ending these harsh practices. And yet, I think, 3 years in, a lot of folks on the left are pretty disappointed with the way he has responded to this, the policies he's kept in some cases from Trump, without going like too deep into Title 42 and everything. But I mean, how would you sort of assess like what Biden has done? How much has he changed since Trump? What has he not done? What's been surprising?
Yeah, I mean, look, they've rebuilt the refugee system. The refugee numbers are going back up after historic drop during the Trump administration, which absolutely gutted the refugee program. You're seeing, major efforts to allow migrants different pathways to come to the U.S. For example, Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans have this opportunity to apply to come to the U.S. and be here under a program known as Parole for 2 years, which could be renewed if they have a financial sponsor in the U.S. And there's all these different programs they've put in place for people. Ukrainians have had a chance to come to the U.S. to flee the war there if they had financial sponsors in America. But if you really look at the southern border, you can see that this administration has turned toward, more restrictive measures to try to really deter migrants from coming, to try to bring those numbers down. I think the border has kind of swallowed up a lot of the bigger goals this administration had when they first came in. I mean, there was talk of getting rid of private prisons, big lofty goals. And some of those just haven't been realized because the border has sucked up so much energy.
As you've said, there are a lot of reasons. You can't necessarily point to one thing. But one thing you can say is different is the role of social media. And we've seen stories and other things online about TikTok videos being created by migrants and basically encouraging folks to come. Looks like they're having almost a good time in some places. And they're very popular. I mean, they go viral. What's your sense of the impact of those?
It's huge. I mean, one of the biggest things is, when you speak to officials, is the word of mouth. People abroad seeing that, their neighbors, their friends, their family members are able to come to the U.S. They made it in. They weren't, arrested. They weren't deported, and it sends a signal. These officials say that, there's a chance to come here and that they should take the risk and come to the United States. So it plays a major, major part. And it's the U.S. government is very focused on this kind of proliferation of videos.
When you say focused, like, what can they do? What are they trying to do?
I think they're just aware of it. They recognize, these trends. They recognize that people are spreading this message. And it's very sophisticated. People are very, in tune with how American policy changes, and they take it in their own hands and make changes accordingly.
It kind of reminds me of, we've talked about this, like if you go and cover prisons in the U.S., like how much folks inside prisons are following the policy debates to the way more than a lot of average people. I mean, it makes sense. It's what impacts you. Ahmed, before we go to a break, I just want to ask, like, we're talking obviously about the southern border, and I would imagine most people coming that way are from Central Latin America broadly. But we've also heard stories that people are flying into places like Mexico so that they can cross on foot and make asylum claims. How, like, widespread would you say that is? Is that a tiny portion of folks, or do we think that that's a growing number?
Yeah, I couldn't say specifically, but it certainly is a big deal. There's a lot of people who do that. And, you know, one of the things Mexico has done in the last few years is restrict some of the visas for people traveling to Mexico and making it a little bit more difficult for people to be able to make that easy flight and cross into the U.S. I mean, I believe they did this for Venezuelans, and afterward we saw this real spike of Venezuelans going through the Darien Gap on their way to the U.S.
All right. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will continue talking with New York Times immigration reporter Hamed Aliaziz, and we'll get into how this is going to impact the 2024 presidential election. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
Welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos, here with Scott Schaefer, and today we're talking with New York Times immigration reporter Hamed Aliaziz. I want to talk a little bit about Mexico. What is the sort of status of the relationship between the nations when it comes to, you know, how they're handling this? I know because a lot of people are coming like through Mexico. How would you sort of characterize the relationship between the Biden administration and them, and where Mexico is at on all of this very complicated issue?
It's a crucial relationship for this administration, for any administrations. You know, this administration has taken a different tack than the Trump administration. We saw that during Trump, there were threats of, you know, tariffs to try to get more enforcement at the southern border. The Biden administration has really emphasized, you know, diplomacy and sending key leaders to Mexico regularly to speak with the president there. You know, Mexico, you see the difference in, you know, more enforcement at the southern border, you know, in Mexico, and the effect it has on the southern border. If you just compare December numbers to January, December, there were more than 300,000 encounters. And already in January, we're seeing, you know, a steep drop off after Mexico really stepped up its enforcement of, you know, stopping people from you know, being able to get on these trains headed to the southern border and elsewhere. So the Biden administration increasingly relies on Mexico to help them, you know, get the numbers down at the border.
I was surprised when Trump came in that Mexico's president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who is, you know, more of a leftist, I think, in Mexican politics, that he seemed to get along extremely well with Trump. And that
kind
they really
a populist, too, though, right?
Yeah, he's a populist. But I'm wondering, like, do you have any sense of what he got from that? And, you know, how is he responding now if to these, you know, threats to use the military against drug cartels? I realize that's a separate topic, but I guess I'm asking, like, the politics on this side of the border, how do they affect politics on the southern side in Mexico?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, trying to, you know, figure out, you know, what's happening in the palace there in Mexico is, you know, quite difficult. But I would say that, you know, it did seem like the president of Mexico wanted, you know, more, you know, consideration from this administration and, you know, more access to the president and have a, you know, have somewhat of a, you know, kind of be courted in a way. And you've really seen this administration, you know, pick up its diplomacy. You know, Blinken, the Secretary of State, going there to Mexico several times in the last few months is an indication that this administration is taking that relationship so very, you know, very seriously, And as far as the military stuff, there's no way that Mexico would be okay with something like that. But we'll see. We'll see down the line what happens.
Yeah. It does strike me Blinken has some other things on his plate in the Middle East and elsewhere. So the fact that he's, making the trip is in itself sort of indicative of where things are at. I mean, I'm curious, before I want to get into the politics of this border deal that seems to have fallen apart in D.C. in 2024. But I feel like we have to mention this issue of drug trafficking and fentanyl. I know earlier this week, David talked on the show about how David Downs, who's actually my husband, talked about how pot is actually being exported into Mexico now because of cannabis legalization here. But there's a lot of narrative around fentanyl and other dangerous opioids and meth and stuff coming up from there. How big of an issue do you see that as? I mean, so much of what we're talking about is really either human trafficking or people, coming for asylum claims.
Yeah, it's a big issue. And, it's one of those issues that you'd expect there to be some bipartisan agreement to crack down on fentanyl and the drug trade, but it's kind of fallen into this partisan back and forth. People blaming the DHS secretary, the policies for leading to, the surge in fentanyl, but this administration, DHS is, they've said repeatedly that they're focused on cracking down, and they've publicized multiple, arrests and busts of fentanyl at the border. So, it continues to be a massive issue.
I want to talk about the domestic politics here, and in particular, how the governors of Texas, Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis in Florida, what they have done in terms of busing migrants up to Martha's Vineyard and up to, I think, Kamala Harris's, front door and to New York City.
Literally,
yeah. So what impact do you think that has? I mean, I suppose you could say it's a smart political move, but it's using human beings as pawns in a very complicated issue.
It kind of seems like it's paid off for them, though.
It does. What's your take?
Yeah, I think it completely changed the game. I think, this idea, at the beginning, it started out sending buses to Washington, D.C., and it was small scale, but we really saw them Texas pour a bunch of resources into, sending people on these buses to New York City, to Chicago. And since then, you've seen these cities come out and actually call for the Biden administration to get the border under control, call for more resources, really shed light on what's happening in their streets and the increase in migrants coming to their cities. And it's kind of, I think been a game changer and ultimately has paid off for the governor. Obviously people say that, yes, this is, not ethical to put people on these buses and send them to these cities. But strictly speaking on a political matter, I mean, I think it, this administration has been caught kind of in a defensive position trying to react to the busing.
I mean you see Mayor Eric Adams talking about it destroying the city. It's really driven this wedge. I wonder though, something I've always sort of been curious about, and I don't know if you have any insight. I grew up in San Diego, and it feels like in California specifically, this is not as kind of hot button of an issue, even in border cities like San Diego, where we do know people cross illegally through, swaths, especially in Eastern County. Why do you think the politics are so different in a place like Texas or Arizona? And then even in these Democratic cities that are, we see the resource strain, that makes sense. But do you have any sense of why California has not been as outraged over this, let's say?
Yeah, I think that, one of the keys is the numbers are just different in a place like Texas. The number of people coming through places like, Del Rio and El Paso and elsewhere are just way higher. And so for border towns there, they're more easily overwhelmed and the resources are stretched. And I think we've seen that this effort to bus people, it's really been targeted at New York and Chicago and D.C. Certainly he's sent some, there's been buses sent to California as well, but the numbers are much lower than other places. So I think California has been somewhat spared from these, the numbers of Venezuelans, for example, coming to the U.S., they're often going to New York and to Florida and elsewhere. So that's where you see more of a reaction.
Well, and I think they were trying to target like sanctuary cities and places right. like that, right? Which is also ironic because you see this whole case playing out in Texas now where the Texans are trying to argue that they have jurisdiction when for years they've said, crack down on sanctuary cities. This is the purview of the federal government.
Yeah, and they lost at the Supreme Court. Yeah. If you're just joining us, by the way, you're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio. I'm Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos. Our guest today is New York Times immigration reporter Hamed Al-Aziz. I want to talk about what's been happening or not happening now in Washington with this negotiation. The Republicans kind of drew a line in the sand. They said, we're not going to even talk about aid for Ukraine and Israel until we have some kind of a deal on the border and increasing border security. And it seemed like the Biden administration really was all in on that. They were maybe recognizing the severity of this as a political issue, and now they've backed away, the Republicans have. What is your read on why that deal almost came together and why it's fallen apart?
I think this president, one of his key accomplishments and focuses has been Ukraine and supporting Ukraine in its war against Russia. So, you know, I think the president is just, you know, willing to do whatever to get that aid. And he's really focused on getting that aid. Ultimately, on the border issue, though, and in immigration, especially in Congress, it's so complicated, and the two sides are so far apart at this point that any type of deal just feels, you know, impossible. Now, I you know, word today came down that there should be some text of you know, this deal from the Senate coming through imminently in the next few days, but even if it passes the Senate, you really just don't see any chance of it passing in the House, with the Speaker of the House already coming out against it, saying that the, you know, former President Trump has told them that it's a bad deal.
Right.
You know, the prospects of it seem, you know, very, very low. But, you know, you never know.
Never say never. But I mean, to your point, it feels like the former president is still driving so much of this debate and conversation. I mean, starting with obviously the way he opened his 26 campaign, running on the wall. And yet, I mean, it seems like to some extent public opinion has shifted more to his side, right? I mean, we're talking about a deal with Democrats that has none of the things that they would have, you know, seen as non-starters before, DACA, a pathway for other immigrants. So, like, can you just talk about, like, Trump's role in all this and how you see that playing out? Is it because of his political skills, or is it sort of, I don't know, has he lucked out, so to speak, with, like, how big of a crisis it's become?
There's such a difference between, you know, these two administrations. I mean, if you look back at Trump, and he was tweeting and talking about immigration constantly, and it made it such a big part of their administration, all the changes they were making. I mean, every single week it felt like there was a new policy rollout, or, you know, some gutting of a former previously bipartisan effort like the refugee system. Whereas this administration is kind of, immigration is like the fifth or sixth issue that's discussed, and it's always in the context of other things. So it does feel that Trump is able to, you know, set the narrative, set the talking points. The Republicans are really, you know, pushing this idea of the border crisis from the beginning of the Biden administration. They made immigration like their top target. And constantly the Biden administration is kind of, again, on the defensive, mm-hmm. trying to show the different things that they've done, trying to show that they do believe in a tough border. They do believe in laws at the border. And for the Biden administration, it's been very difficult having to deal with these increases in numbers and the, you know, a government process that is really not built to handle 300,000 people crossing every, you know, a month. That's just
it's wild. I mean, it's a lot of
hard people. Hard to get your head around. One of the things Biden has said recently is, look, if you can't pass a deal, a bipartisan deal that I would sign, if you won't do that, then give me the authority to shut down the border and I will do that. What would that look like? What is he talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was an interesting turn of phrase there, very similar to the kind of the language that we saw in the last administration. My understanding of him, you know, that was, again, you know, my assessment of it was that it was in the context of the supplemental deal, and there is a discussion in that deal where, if there's a certain number of people that have crossed the border throughout the week, that there'd be an ability for border agents to turn back migrants very quickly, akin to what we saw during the pandemic, where border agents were able to use a provision known as Title 42 to send migrants back to Mexico without considering their asylum claims. But as far as, totally shutting down the border, we'll have to see what comes out of this deal. There's little that can be done outside of that.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a lot of what Republicans are kind of pushing over, like, it just raises the question, like, then why didn't Trump do that? Or what, I mean, the president doesn't have a magic wand here, right? Like, I guess the question would be, like, what do you see then in the weeks and months ahead for this Biden administration? What tools, if any, are at their disposal that they haven't used yet?
I mean, they've used a lot of them, right? I mean, they tried to do a version of a Trump asylum, ban restriction at the southern border. They've run into some resource issues as so many people have come, and there's only a limited number of officers that they have to process people through this new, very restrictive asylum policy. Right. That's been hard. But again, I think this administration is just going to lean toward deterrence, look through any ways they can.
Maybe that's the shut down the border comment, right? It's like to send a message.
But, go ahead.
No, I mean, a lot of these things, that Trump tried were blocked by the courts. I mean, attempts to block asylum, attempts to, stop people from being allowed to cross the border without authorization. A lot of these things were blocked in federal court, oftentimes in California. So, there's a difficult legal path as well.
You mentioned a lack of resources, and one of the places that is true is in the immigration courts. And a lot of these folks who are coming in, they're seeking asylum, they get a court date sometimes 4 years, 5 years down the road. And I read that, like in Los Angeles, and I think it was 2022 or maybe last year, 72% didn't even show up for their hearing. What is the solution there? I mean, you could add a lot of immigration judges, I guess, and have these things processed more quickly, but, there is no magic bullet, is there?
No, and the immigration courts are often forgotten as this, as a major part of this system. But everything is really connected, right? I mean, I think if you poured a bunch of resources into the immigration courts and you were able to process people and get all these deportation orders, you would need to have, at the same time, more resources for ICE officers to pick up those people to get them ready for deportation. Some people do not want to be deported, and so they will, not cooperate with ICE and voluntarily show up at the ICE offices for the flight. So, as a country, there's a real consideration there of, are we willing to not only fund the immigration courts, but ICE and add more ICE officers that I can actually implement and pick up people after they've received the removal orders.
That is New York Times Immigration and Department of Homeland Security reporter Ahmed Ali-Aziz. Thank you so much for your time today. Congrats on the pretty new job. We used to work together with The Chronicle, so it's been fun to watch your career.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so kind of you. I'm excited to be here.
All right. That is going to do it for this edition of Political Breakdown. We're a production of KQED Public Radio.
Our engineer today is the fabulous Christopher Beal. Our producer is Izzy Bloom. I'm Scott Schaefer.
And I'm the fabulous Marie Salata.
Yes, you are.
We'll see you next time. Thanks, everyone.